try to keep it we try to keep it professional.
Professional.
Jamming some tunes. Hey, guess what?
What?
Welcome to another edition of Inside Bassmaster. We are comfortably tucked inside our palatial studios in the Bassmaster Towers, overlooking downtown Birmingham, and it is hot, middle of the summer. We're already looking forward to college football, looking forward to the cooler temperatures that may never get here as it seems right now, but we're going to do things a little bit different today. Normally, we've been talking about fantasy fishing, we've been talking about tournaments, everything going on at the Bassmaster Elite Series events, and we're going to change it up today. We're going to talk about Bassmaster Magazine, and with me today are two of the faces, thankfully just faces, of the world-famous Bassmaster Magazine, the editor himself, Mr. James Hall.
Roll Tide!
And the lovely Helen White, who is the glue that keeps James employed, which he owes you a big thank you for.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas.
Thanks for being here, guys. We are excited to change things up a little bit. This whole podcast is dedicated to everything that goes on inside the walls of Bassmaster, and there's a lot that we're going to touch. This is the first time we're branching out, and we're excited about it.
It could be an 8-hour podcast, Thomas.
Let's make it 8 hours. We're going to start out talking about how you've managed to stay editor for so long.
I bribe Dave Precht, my boss. I give him all of my fishing equipment and some cash on occasion.
And you're charming, too, I hate to say. So this is one of our favorite issues we're going to talk about. In fact, we're going to start doing a magazine preview, and we're going to talk about the magazine as it is mailing out from our offices, our palatial offices. You're going to get a little sneak peek at what you're going to find inside the pages of Bassmaster Magazine, and changes coming to Bassmaster Magazine, which, as we discussed today, are going to be exciting, extensive, and some of us are probably going to have to drink a lot more to put up with the changes. But we're excited about it nonetheless.
Every day will be National Bourbon Day then, Thomas.
And for today, I would like to raise a glass that it is actually National Bourbon Day, or whatever. We aren't going to talk about that.
Cheers to Bassmaster.
There we go. Let's talk about Bassmaster Magazine. This is one of our favorite issues because we discuss the 100 best bass lakes in the nation. And before we get into those details, James, this is a question that we get a lot. Something we hear about a lot is like, well, every time my lake gets labeled the best in the nation, it gets ruined. But we know that's just, you know, conjecture. It's not true. But what do we have to say about that?
Well, I mean, what is true and is that the number one lake, and really a lot of the lakes in the top 10 do get quite a bit more pressure, because they are the hottest fisheries on the planet at the moment, and that's just, you know, kind of part of the deal. And people complain about it because it's their home lake, right? And they do see a lot more fishermen fishing their body of water.
As I'm going to complain in a little while.
Yeah, like the others, I will ignore you. and you got to remember, this isn't just about the lake itself, but it's about the community. You know, some of these communities really thrive and need the monies that's brought in by tourism. Mm-hmm. And fishermen bring in a ton of money when they come and fish a body of water. They buy gas, they buy beer, soda, stay in hotels. So
was that a beers with an S at the end?
I think that was a beers.
It was a beers. Beers, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's for another discussion, but carry on.
So at any rate, not only is this list built for the fishermen, you know, the guys that don't have a whole lot of time to spend on the water, it's built for them so they know where they can go to be most successful. But it's also a great freaking injection of money for the community. So all these little towns that surround these lakes get a great deal of money. And yes, there is added pressure to the fishery. But the lakes that have been number one thus far, although some people will disagree with me, have not been destroyed by the added pressure.
That's a fact. In fact, I spoke to one of my friends who will remain nameless that actually earns a living on Sturgeon Bay. And that was the number one lake 4 years ago.
That's right.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and there was talk that the fishery had been just put under when we went there for Angler of the Year a couple years ago. That was 2015 AOI. There's talk that the fishing wasn't as great, but you know what? When you're talking about Sturgeon Bay being the best fishery, you're thinking May, June, maybe early July when that mm-hmm. lake is at its peak. We were there in September, just a difficult time of year compared to when they're on beds. However, this friend of mine said that the recent Sturgeon Bay Open, which is a very nationally renowned smallmouth tournament, six fish tournament. Was very impressive this year, one of the best tournaments he's attended, and kicked out numbers like it always has. So I wouldn't say that that specific body of water was ruined. You said something about St. Clair, though, that, you know, there were
busy parking lots. Oh, Lord, we got complaints. That was number one. The people who went up there for the first time sent us love letters. The anglers that fish there all the time sent us hate mail. And it got an extreme amount of pressure, and somehow, you know, and I will say that St. Clair the following year was not the same St. Clair. It was way down.
But there was another reason for that.
Yeah, everybody said it's because all the pressure that the lake received because it being named number one. Come to find out, biologists said there was something funky that happened to that fishery. The fish actually got hurt from some way, somehow. So it was not the pressure that did it, but the fish actually got sick. They didn't die. It wasn't a die-off, but it was a sickness that got in the... And now it's back. It has rebounded greatly.
Yeah, and we're headed back there in August.
And it's going to be awesome. You know, Falcon, that was our number one lake, and it went down the crapper the next year, but that was because of drought. It wasn't because of the water levels.
That's yes. right. Mm-hmm. And now it's actually coming back, I believe your list indicate.
Oh, yeah.
So we're saying there's really no correlation.
Well, right. we're trying to put that to rest, but the reality is some lakes are special. Toledo Bend, special, but it was number one lake 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. Can we blame the fact that the pressure's gone up through the roof because of Bassmaster.com, or is it because Kevin Van Dam won a tournament there?
I don't know. You know, and that's such a big lake. And you say that it's gone down. They still caught by, 2 weeks ago, they still had 73 fish over 10 pounds.
I'm not sure it's gone down. Maybe it's just seen a little added pressure, but the lake is so big. It's 160 some thousand acres or something like that. There's so many trees. Mm-hmm. There's bass on that lake that have never seen a lure. So I think that we want to put to rest the fact that making the top 100 list in Bassmaster magazine does not give your lake a death sentence, unless we're talking about my motherland of Minnesota, which is where I actually went to James and complained about this. We'll get to that. I'm not giving anything away, but I will say that as much as I love where I'm from, I'm not worried about it. I just like making his day hell. Before we get into that, though, Helen did most of the legwork for this.
Oh, okay. She does all the work. I try to take all the credit. She does all the work.
So when you go into gathering all these materials, how easy is it to get a hold of everybody, get pictures, get statements, get information? Is it something you need somebody there to give you information on, or can you get it by yourself?
Well, first of all, this is a giant project for the magazine.
It's our biggest project of the year, really.
Mm-hmm, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, and for the company, too. I think it's a huge project. This year, I think it was a little easier because people are now familiar with our list, and they know when we call or when we email without having to say, hey, your lake's going to be on the 100 Best Bass Lakes list. They know what we're talking about, mm-hmm. and they're excited about it.
You know, if you go to Toledo Bend, there are signs up that say this mm-hmm. lake made top mm-hmm. Bassmaster's top lake list. So, I mean, there's something to it. They bank some of their economic impact
on making this list. I talked to the folks from the tourism department down there, and after it was ranked number one the first time, their tourism, because they track it very closely. They spend a lot of money against it. Their tourism was up 33% after that first year. I haven't talked to them since the second one came out, but it is very, very important to them, and mm-hmm. it's certainly a sense of pride, but also for economic impact. It's important to those communities.
That's important, but you made a point to me today I really want to touch on, and this is really ultimately why we do this. All of us that work in this business, especially Bassmaster, have a passion for fishing, have a passion for the outdoors, and you know, we may not have the opportunity to hook up our boat and drive to any lake in the nation and go whenever we want. We're limited by vacation days. We're limited by our jobs on days when we can be gone. And so you want to make the best selection possible to have the best fishing trip possible. How did that play into these decisions?
Oh, it's huge. And as probably Helen, I'll let her describe, the process is enormous. The project is big, and it takes us, 2.5-3 months almost to put it all together?
Yeah.
And, I mean, why don't you walk through the process. You know, I sit there... And I say, "Whoa, that's a good idea. We should talk to these guys." But Helen is the one actually who imparts. So who all do we contact, Helen?
Well, first we reach out to fisheries biologists, DNRs, in each state, conservation organizations, and we get them to rank their top fisheries. And we give them a list of fisheries that have either run in the past or that we think should be on the list, and they'll rank them for us. We also give them an opportunity to tell us about a fishery that's in their state that we might not have on our list and tell us why it should rank on our list. And that is the basis of our information. We also go to the Bass Council, which is a group of our membership that will rank the fishing in their region.
Including pro anglers, right?
Well, that's not part of that's a whole different subset of what we do.
This is just a membership.
Mm-hmm. Membership,
mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, go ahead.
And then we go to our Bass Nation group, and we talk to the presidents and the conservation directors, and we have them rank the lakes and fisheries in their region as well.
Yeah, so that means a massive survey. So we do the DNRs, and then we do the Bass Council, which is, you know, 3,500 anglers who are extremely avid all across the nation. And then we go to all the Bass Nation groups, you know, presidents and conservation directors, and we get to allow them to fill out the survey ranking what lakes we think are good, and then you fill in the blank area. Hey, we want to know if there's a killer lake in your area that we are not familiar with. Please put it on there and tell us why it's good.
You know, there's a lot of exciting things in the entire selection process, but, you know, occasionally you're going to get to a lake or a region or a state or a chamber of commerce that may not want to give away their secrets. But the funny thing is, and we this is kind of what we touched on earlier, is a lot of times by the time we're getting to this point where this magazine is published annually and we're getting those that list out to everyone, the secret's already been out that Lake X, Y, or Z is producing a tremendous amount of fish. Mm-hmm. Do you rely on tournament data for that, sampling data from the DNR? Do you creel surveys from the local angling pressure? What kind of stuff makes up that decision for
Well,
you?
A little bit of it all, honestly. We do a lot. Once we get the lakes back from these surveys, we send it out to our regional riders, and which is an advancement that we have made since the first time that we did this list, 6 years ago. So we have Brian Sack out on the West Coast, who's actually works for a fisheries agency out there, so he's very familiar with it, and he writes our Western division. We have a rider up in the Northeast, Brian Sack. Mark Hicks.
Right.
Yeah, who does the Northeast stuff. He's a tournament angler up there and very familiar with those lakes. Andy Crawford from Louisiana. He did our Central division, and I did the Southeast. So, and I task him. I say, look, we have to have data that is no older than 12 months old, and hopefully newer than that to base a ranking, the participation or the placement on this list. And so they got to find it. They got to scour the internet, and a lot of it comes from tournament weights because that is real weight that we can verify.
Mm-hmm.
But if we've got a lake on the list from the DNR, Mississippi DNR, for example, that says this little lake right here has had 5 fish in the last 2 months over 12 pounds, we're going to look at it, whether there's been a tournament on that body of water or not, and we're going to find out if that is if that is for real. And if it is and it constitutes a ranking, then that's what we do.
So you're not going to discriminate based on lake size. It's productivity, mostly.
Mostly productivity. And we put a lake on here that's quite small, and I think it was from Mississippi.
Yeah.
But it ends up being a lake that if you want to go trophy hunting, I mean, you're not going to go out there and probably catch 100 fish a day, and it's a small, like 600 acres, I think. But they believe the next world record's gonna come to this lake. There's been an 18 pound fish caught there.
A big one.
Yeah, there are.
It's 200 acres.
200 acres. Yeah, 200 so acres. It's a little bitty guy, but just know that if you are want to go for the biggest fish that you can catch in this region, it may be in that one little 200 acre lake.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, beyond that one, we kind of, anything under 2,500 acres or so, we try to not put on the list because we do not want to get it overfished.
Mm-hmm.
But, there are...
You had to include that one.
Yeah, if there's a world record game out there and it's on our list, I get a egg on my face.
So regionally, how is this broken up, Alan?
It's divided into four regions. So we have Southeast, Northeast, Central, and Western. And really, the surveys that we send out at the beginning are just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the research that goes into the list. So like James said, the riders, once they're given that survey list from each of the four regions, it's really up to them to do the hard, heavy research for the project.
Hmm. So it's not just a gather up, have a meeting, and send out your deployed assignments and get them back in a week and hope it's all correct. You put months of work into this.
Yeah, yeah. And there are other, I mean, I'm not going to bash anybody else's lists out there, but there are people that will come up with lists that are based on historic, you know, these historic fisheries. Mm-hmm. You know, Okeechobee or Gunnersville, for example. Yeah. Gunnersville always on every list in the world. Well, Gunnersville is not great right now. But you got to do your homework to know that. You know, you can look at one or two tournaments and you'll see a 25-pound string. You're like, oh, Gunnersville's still awesome. We'll look down that list a little bit, and you only had to have 13 pounds to be in the top 20. And so that does not bode well against some of these other fisheries where you got to have 20 pounds to be in the top 20. You know.
Now, let's talk about a facet of this that I think this will add any peace to the mind that's concerned about a certain lake getting too much press. Is lakes are naturally cyclical, especially in today's bass fishing climate. It's no secret that Gunnersville, Toledo Bend, Okeechobee are bass fishing factories, and they're going to continue to be so. You can still go out and catch over 25 pounds on a fun day of fishing at Gunnersville. In fact, there was a tournament guy that caught over 40 this year in a five-fish limit. So that proves the
lake. That's me, but you, maybe not.
Maybe not. I'm going to go after those 12-inch spots because five fish is a limit. Who cares? By the way, there was a particular tournament where all your scouting certainly did not help us out.
I don't recall what you're talking
Anyways,
about.
Anyways, boat broke down somewhere. But the whole point is there is a point to this where you have to understand that these lakes are going to experience highs and lows in productivity, and that may or may not be affected by this list. So we're going to touch that one more time.
Yes.
This is to give people that love to fish, that love to catch big bass, a list of places to go. This is a bucket list. But the other side of this is there are so many fisheries across the entire nation that don't get any press because we don't visit as the Bassmaster Elite Series cannot fish there because you can't have 110 anglers on a 200-acre lake. That's going to be like walleye fishing. But I tell you what, the magazine is out. The secret is out. Let's talk about the top 10. The rest of the list, you're going to have to dig into the magazine, go through every page of Bassmaster Magazine to get them. But let's talk about the top 10. Number 10 going down to 1, what is the number 10 selection?
Well, actually, what we've done this year, Thomas, is we went the Dandy Dozen. We went ahead and extended that by 2 because it was too tough to make a top 10 list. It was
top
too close.
12.
Yeah, so there's a top 12 situation going on this year. And let's see, and top 12, we're looking at Chickamauga, Thomas, in Tennessee. That one is 36,240 acres. Plenty of room for people to gang up on, if you know what I'm saying. But if you look at the recent tournaments, you had at Chickamauga, we had a 23 pound per day average when John Cox was there at the Southern Open.
Mm-hmm.
That's stout. I mean, it wasn't I caught 23 pounds one day. It's that what he averaged every day of the tournament. All right. You had, let's see, the top 50 had 15 plus pounds, and 11.5 was caught. So, you know, you're talking about a beautiful lake, one, easy access, right? And then two, you have the chance to catch not only a giant bass, mm-hmm. something over 10 pounds, but a chance to catch a limit over 20 pounds when you visit. And then that's the type of stuff that you need to make this top 12 list.
Helen, what's next?
Number 11, Thousand Islands, St. Lawrence River, New York.
In fact, we're going there in a couple weeks, one of our favorite tournaments of the year. So that's number 11. So
that's
now
number
11. Now we're in the top 10.
You're finally
I'm a little
now.
I'm tripped up by this. It's tripping me out.
We gave you an extra 2.
You and math don't get along well, do they?
That's why I write or talk on the radio. I got a good face for it. But anyways, next one.
All right, number 10. We are looking at a previous number 1, Falcon Lake down in Texas.
That made a rise. That was that even in the top 10 last year?
It's rebounding.
It barely made the top. I think it was 10th last year as well, but it had tougher competition this year to go against and remained in the top 10. So
sure.
You got some 30-pound limits coming out of that place again. It's going to, I believe in my heart of hearts, it will even skyrocket further north next year.
Well, that's impressive. Helen, number 9.
Number 9, Lake St. Clair, Michigan.
See, we got all these just wonderful northern fisheries.
Another former number 1.
That's right.
Is Thomas cringing? I don't know.
Hey, we're going to visit there in August, and we're going to see if your prediction on the quality of the fishery has, in fact, gone above what it is forecasted. So that is number nine. Number eight.
Eight, we got Santee Cooper Lakes. You're talking.
I'm actually surprised that isn't higher because that's been putting out 30-pound limits for a couple years now.
It was highly ranked last year, and it probably would be ranked higher this year had the competition not been so impressive.
No, that's fine. That's South Carolina, right?
That's right.
Number seven, Helen.
Lake Erie, another New York fishery.
Well, New York, Ohio,
Right, so this is the 30-mile radius Ontario. From Buffalo.
Yeah, that's out of Buffalo. Now, remember, Ohio, we divided the Great Lakes up. We said we put it 30-mile, because they're huge. We can't say Lake Erie's great. It's number one. Well, what part of Lake Erie? You got to travel 18,000 miles to get around thing. So when we're talking about the Great Lakes, we're talking about regions of the Great Lakes, and she's talking about the Buffalo region.
You know, that is a great area. In fact, you and I went out, and I think we pounded on the drum.
It's a killer drum fishery.
So that's number seven?
That is number seven.
Number eight, or number six. We're going backwards with these numbers.
Yeah, so we got Lake Berryessa in California is number six. That was drought-stricken for the last couple of years. It is not only full, but filling over currently, and the fish have rebounded there. It was always held big ones, but now it seems like they're easy to catch. So you can catch a trophy smallmouth, spotted bass, and largemouth out of this one. It's really tough to beat.
Is this the place where that potential catch or at least world record spot was caught?
No, that's Bullard's Bar.
Is that on this list?
It is on the list, but it did not make the top.
Okay, so that's 12. Number six.
That's number six.
So we're counting down from six. That
Are
is
you
number
ready
five.
For the top five?
All right, top five.
Do we have
else.
A drum roll?
There it is, top five. Helen.
Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta in California.
Really?
Really.
So, talk to me. How big is that place? That's got to be like a state.
About 18,000 miles.
It's close to 1,100 square miles.
And it's hard to explain. Usually we speak in acres. 1,100 square miles.
1,100 square miles.
So a couple of years ago, Justin Lucas won out there. What, mm-hmm. Was that the Delta?
The Delta, California Delta. That's right.
Okay, mm-hmm. so there are bass there to be caught. He caught a 10-pounder, didn't he?
Yeah. Dude, there are massive bass there to be caught.
Wow.
It's scary how good that fishery is. And there have been some complaints about them removing fish from the Delta because of all sorts of crazy California things going on out there. I talked to Brian Sack, who is our writer, and he lives very nearby, and he talked to the fish. He said, James, the place is freaking loaded.
Yeah.
Well, it took 31 pounds to win an American bass tournament there in March and April. Yeah. So
it's no joke.
That's a lot of big fish. So that's number five. Number four, counting down.
Uh-huh. This one is going to be, this is the first, it's first time in the top 12. All right, if we're going to call that the list, Sharon Harris Lake, North Carolina.
I don't even know what that is. It's in North Carolina.
Let me tell you a little bit about it, brah. They have caught, there were two 40-plus pound limits of bass that came out of Sharon Harris on consecutive weekends.
Oh, wait, we've heard about this. Okay, yes. So I've seen, there's a video for this somewhere on Bassmaster.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a 41.93 one weekend, the following weekend a 46.89 limit.
Okay, I don't do numbers.
That's nuts.
So you said 41, we'll just call it 41 divided by 5, that's an 8.2-pound average. I've not even caught a fish over 8 pounds in my life.
Yeah, well, this the 46.89...
You
want
to go? Should we go?
Let's back up. This is done. Show's over. We're gone.
The 46.89 limit, and by the way, these two...
46?
Yes, it's 46.89, so we're talking basically 47. It had both a 10.38 and a 10.91-pounder in the same limit.
That's a 9.2 average. Oofta. Mm-hmm. That's what we say up north when we're surprised.
I don't even know how to spell that word.
I'm totally lost. Okay, so the rest of the list is moot at this point. I want to go to, this is North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Sharon Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Was that number three or four?
That was four.
Quattro.
All right, so we're counting down from four. Number three.
I think this means I get to announce number
one.
Yeah,
you do. Helen, take the floor. Number three and number two are yours.
Oh.
We're shutting Paul down because I got some words for him. Go ahead, three and two.
Oh man. Okay, number three, Clear Lake, California.
And tell me about Clear Lake. What how big is that place?
So Clear Lake is pretty big. We have 43,785 acres.
That's pretty substantial.
That's pretty substantial. Mm.
And you know, the funny thing is we make a western sweep once every 3 or 5 years. It doesn't seem to be on a schedule, but we're due to go back.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard about the 2018 or 2019 schedule yet, but I would guess complete conjecture, this is not something to write down, that we will visit Clear Lake again in the next couple of years.
Dude, it takes 35 pounds. If you want to check, it takes 28 out at Clear Lake. It's a land of giants.
You know, Helen knows about giants. In fact, there was a picture I saw recently that she posted that had a big bass from somewhere. Was that a Carolina fish?
No, Mississippi. Ross Barnett.
Say it again.
No, Florida.
Yeah. I was going to say, that wasn't Ross Barnett.
You said Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Missed a couple of the a couple S's in the I.
Number three, rolling down to number two, closing in on number one, is number two.
Oh, really? Number two, Sam Rayburn Reservoir, Texas.
Sam Rayburn. You know, I have to say, Toledo Bend was like my I have to go there lake. I need to go spend some time. James and I went there a while, embarrassed ourselves at a tournament, had fun. But after I went to Sam Rayburn this year for the elite event, Texas Fest, Sam Rayburn superseded Toledo Bend. And that lake is just, it's picturesque.
It's on fire. It's in the cycle, dude. It has cycled up over Toledo Bend, which is one of the reasons we do this list. You were there at this last Elite Series tournament. Yeah. Do you know how many anglers out of 4 days did not catch a limit of bass?
One.
One angler. Mm-hmm. Maybe the first time I've ever seen that stat ever in it. And that was Tim Horton. He caught four.
Mille Lacs. But we won't go into that. You know, the thing of it is that lake has the potential to give you a 30-pound stringer day after day. And you don't realize this. The acreage is noticeably less than Toledo Bend, and it is, if you go shore to shore, it's about 30 miles away from Toledo Bend. But there's a whole nother eastern arm to that thing that most anglers don't fish because the most available, the most prevalent boat launches are on the western arm, which is that big, long, it's a V-shaped lake. And you know, the tournament was won on the long side, but we didn't even cover anybody at this last elite event that was in that eastern arm. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a whole other section of that lake that I've not seen. But it makes sense. You've got the deep ledges for the crankbait guys. You've got all the flipping stuff for the guys who like to pitch a jig all year long. You've got the muck for the frog guys. You've got anything that you want to catch a fish on, Sam Rayburn has got it.
Yes.
So now to number one. And this is the long-awaited moment, the drum roll for those of us that have been waiting. The number one lake on the 2007, is it 16 or 17?
17.
Where has time gone?
You're getting old, bro.
2017 James Hall is
Mille Lacs in Minnesota. What?
You know,
see Thomas's face right now.
Oh my gosh, he just pooped in his pants.
A little bit. I'm gonna need a new chair. But what I will tell you is that lake belongs in that spot. Last year, this year, and next year.
We gotta have the data. But it certainly belongs there this year.
Well, here's the thing. That lake is known. It is a lifetime destination for the walleye fanatic. It is a lifetime destination for the muskie fanatic, which I fished there. I've not caught any fish out of it. There are muskies in that lake. But it has now become a lifetime destination for the smallmouth fanatic. And the reason being is we had our Angler of the Year championship there last year. There were more, this is a fact, more 20-pound bags weighed at Mille Lacs than the entire season.
Do you want to know how many in that one event limits over 20 pounds?
Let's have it.
94.
94
limits in one tournament over 20 pounds. If it had been a four-day derby, it would have been 100 pounds of smallmouth would have won.
Minimum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may not have made a check in 100 pounds.
No, I mean, Goober, the, you know, 25 pounds a day won. 25 pounds and change won it. So it was, it was not the best fishing, and that's which is part of the data that we looked at. There are tournaments that have been won since we've been there that take well over 30 pounds, and all the guys we talked about when they're like, "Oh man, y'all ain't hitting it." Well, they know, like, "Oh man, you're not hitting it right."
You got to get up there when the fishing's good, and then you got to get that musky bait and figure eight down around the front of the boat, not the back.
You're just catching the little 5-pounders, or however y'all talk.
I realize.
I don't even try it.
I know. I realize there's a language barrier.
Yes.
We've had this conversation today. In fact, we had a long discussion in the office about many of the ways that we spell and list certain words. And while I feel I'm correct on many, I was shut down simply because I'm from the North. Mille Lacs is a great fishery. I'm not going to disagree with it.
Was that bitter?
That was bitter.
Okay.
It's bluegills.
There's no ill.
Nobody gets the joke, but whatever. The point of it is Mille Lacs belongs in that spot. And before we wrap up this section, there's one other thing we want to talk about. But before we wrap this up, every lake that you decide to visit in 2017 and 2018, regardless if it's based off of this list or anything else, if you have your own bucket list, conservation is absolutely essential. It's not about taking all the fish that you catch back to the cutting house and putting them in your freezer. Bass fishing is a resource that we're able to enjoy, thankful, because of the catch and release mentality that was created by our founder long ago when we started these tournaments, 50 years ago for that matter.
Yeah, this is the 50th anniversary of the first tournament that Ray Scott ever produced, 1967. Years. Yeah, the All-American, and that's what the cover story this past issue of Bassmaster was about. And Bob Cobb, the coolest thing about it is that Bob Cobb, the very first editor of the magazine, wrote it for us. And so it was really cool to have him contribute again to the pages of Bassmaster. So in this issue, you've got something from all the editors ever in the history of Bassmaster. You have Bob Cobb with this piece. I've written some stuff, and Dave Preck contributed. So it is, it's really cool, and it's special, and it takes you back to where we came from. There's a picture of the first time a guy put a trolling motor on the front of a bass boat instead of the back. Everybody assumes, most people, that it's always been on the front. Nope, that's not the case. Somebody had to be the first to try it, and it happened at our first bass tournament.
There's a lot of things that have happened in those 50 years, and in coming months, we're actually going to be producing a lot of content on Bassmaster.com. You're going to see stuff in the magazines to talk about 50 years of tournament bass fishing, but Beaver Lake is the first place that a Bassmaster event was ever held. I don't remember what it was called at the time, do you?
An All-American Invitational?
That's right. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And that's Arkansas on the... Is that a White River impoundment?
I believe that is.
I think that's right. It's the first impoundment on the White River, if I'm correct.
Yeah, maybe so.
So, a historic fishery. Something that happened 50 years ago. If you're looking for a bucket list...
Famsky.
Go visit Beaver Lake. But so, as we talk about Bassmaster turning 50 years, I want a memory... Now, Helen and myself haven't been here as long, but we've got some memories. I want a memory from James Hall from about, I'm going to say 16, 17, 18 years ago, that before you were distinguishedly silver, what was going on at Bassmaster at that time?
I know that we didn't have fancy computers. You know, I think when I went to my fourth or fifth year in Bassmaster, I got my first flip phone. You know, and you think about how technology has changed. You know, yes. We were still, everything was paper proofs. We send paper to the printer. We got paper back. Now everything is done digitally. We send it digitally. We get it back the next day, to proof before it gets printed. So there's a lot of change. The biggest memory, strangely enough, the thing that pops out in my mind when I think way back to the times when we were on Carmichael Road in Montgomery, Alabama, I remember, and I guess it's really not that long ago, it feels, but 9/11. Mm-hmm. That happened while I was at work, and I walked into Dave Preck's office, and he said, I think somebody just flew a plane into a building. How dumb do you have to be? And then we got news of the next one, and then the next one. And so I was like, oh my gosh, and it was that whole surreal feeling that happens, And it happened, as I was a part of the company, and all of our family members in the company all shared in that sort of thing. I know that's not what you're asking about, but that's kind of the one of the memory that really pops out to me. Where I was in the Bassmaster editorial offices watching the most ginormous act of terrorism ever in the history of the world.
Well, that's something I think every one of us that has an age over 15, for whatever the years are now. Well,
I was going to say I was in fifth grade.
You're in fifth grade. It's terrible of me to not do this math. I don't do numbers, but you're looking at 16 years ago, and I think all of us can remember exactly where we were when that happened. But we don't need to make the show about that. It is something we need to not forget about, but it's something that if you're going to look back on the days of old, you are no spring chicken anymore. So thinking that far back, that's pretty impressive. I can tell you I was in college.
She was in fifth grade, bro.
I know.
So I'm glad that she makes you feel old.
Look, there is something about everything that we do that ties us all together. Mm-hmm. And Helen, I know that you don't live and die by the bass rod, but you are invested in this. I've seen you catch fish. You've been in my boat and caught fish, which is more impressive than him.
That's more than you've done in your boat.
Whatever. The last time I took you on a turn, I'm taking her on the next tournament because she can produce. You know why? Because she listens.
Shut it.
Anyways. Is this what you get when you bring ideas to the table?
Always.
I know, it's tough. So think about one of your favorite memories in your your tenured career as a Bassmaster employee? Something that stands out.
Oh, a favorite memory.
The day she started working for James Hall.
You know, actually.
Yes!
Hey, that's a big promotion. A well-earned promotion.
Yes.
No, I think when I got the job, I had interviewed with James and Dave, and they met me in Birmingham, and we had done a telephone interview, and then maybe a day or two later, I got a phone call from James.
Was it how easily do you get offended?
Well, that was after the interview.
Seriously.
Mine too.
And he said, I have some really bad news for you. You're going to have to, and I just, my heart immediately sank. I was like, God, I didn't get the job. This is terrible. He said, you're going to have to cancel your plans this weekend because we want to fly you to Orlando.
That was good.
And I can hear him saying that to the T.
That is a great memory. Uh-huh. That is a great memory. That's what started it off.
Bamski.
You know what? Look, my memory does not come from my employment with Bassmaster. It was the first classic I ever attended in a media capacity. I went to Lay Lake, which is 40 minutes from my door, and that is from the esteemed, beautiful country of Minnesota. And I literally walked on that dock during that cold, frosty morning. You remember how cold it was at that classic?
Yeah, it was cold.
It was brutal. It was not as brutal as Tulsa, but it was bad enough for Alabama.
I was probably in the fifth grade.
How many times did you do the fifth grade, Ellen? Do we need to talk about some other things?
She didn't mention that in her interview.
I just remember there's that thing, and I think everybody that's been in a tournament will agree with me. There's that smell of two-cycle oil in the air, exhaust. There's a smell of the lake, and it smelled good on a February day. And usually where I come from, that's ice fishing. And I thought, man, you know what? These people down here know how to make life good 365. Now, I like ice fishing. I enjoy ice fishing. In fact, that's something I miss a little bit. But to have that experience in Alabama, that was 2010, I believe, was my first classic. I attended every one. I've been at every one since then, except for the first Tulsa. So whatever math, I'm not going to bother with it. But I'll never forget watching Kevin Van Dam run his boat on the final day when they called takeoff. He ran a big loop around the entire pod of boats waiting to get their number called. And he was off plane on the back side because all he had to do was idle through the bridge on Beeswax Creek mm-hmm. to get to his fishing spot. So something about that, like he burned probably less than a tank of gas that whole week and won how many thousands of dollars. So there's lots of that kind of stuff. We're almost done here, but quickly go through we're talking about the 100 best bass lakes, and that is which issue of Bassmaster?
That's a July, August issue.
There's a couple other highlights in there that you need not miss.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of, we have really made this a travel issue. You know, the 100 best bass lakes, as much as it is creating a bucket list, it's also telling you where you need to travel next, you know? Mm-hmm. So beyond those destinations that, you know, cover the entire U.S., we've also added a couple of international destinations to this issue. One being Lake El Salto mm-hmm. and El Mexico, which is muy bueno.
Muy bueno.
Yeah, cerveza. Now that's all the Spanish words I know.
Me too. I don't even know what I said.
Yeah. So it is a enigma down there because usually those lakes are incredibly cyclical. It has maintained its integrity.
Still good.
It's still so good. Yeah. So we talk about El Salto a little bit down there, and we also talk about Africa.
Yeah, we have a really, really cool feature on Africa. On Africa and bass fishing in Africa. And one of the main pros mentioned in the story is Jerry Usta, one of our Bass Nation anglers that is a big tournament fisherman in Africa and also comes up here to Fish Nation tournaments and has fished a classic a few times.
Yes, yeah, he's incredible, that guy. And the reason those whole fish exist is because of Ray Scott. He took them down there. He secured them for some South Africans, paid off somebody to fly them across the pond.
It is a really cool story how he got them down there.
Yeah, and they have thrived. And now they're all over South Africa and Zimbabwe, incredible lakes down there. And it talks about the, you know, having to avoid hippos and crocs and stuff like that. So it is a wild adventure. And I've fished down there one time. For a day and a half, and it is probably, as far as international travel goes, it's my numero uno choice moving forward.
You want to go to Africa?
Oh, God, so bad, bro. It is that good. They, you know, the 18 pounder is a big one down there. They have not just a 10 pound club, but they have a 10. What are they? What kind of units do they use down there?
Probably kilograms, right? Would that be a pound equivalent?
No, it's a little more than a pound. So they have a 10 kilo club, and so that's their kind of thing, which is close to 11 pounds, and they spit at 8 pounders.
You should see the pictures for this article. God. They're insane.
It's awesome.
It's all the more reason to open the pages of Bassmaster magazine. Now one of my favorite sections of the show, the Would You Rather. Helen, would you rather be ate by a croc or a hippo?
A hippo.
James?
I'm going to go...
Crocs are real twisty.
They're twisty, but you drowned. And a hippo, you've got to actually be... you got to die by the stomach acid. I'm going to go croc.
You're going to go croc? Ew. I think I'm going to go 308 Winchester. And not worry about it. But hey, look, we have got a great magazine coming up for you. It's going to be in your mailboxes in coming days. It's something that we're excited about. This is kind of your virtual, except without video, tour of the new Bassmaster magazine. We're going to be doing this on a regular basis. This has been an exciting time as we look forward to the top 100 lakes. Before we do that, which lake out of the top 12, because we did top 12 this time, which one out of the top 12 do we overlook that's worth mentioning? Just one from James and then one from Helen.
Oh, God. That is not nice.
Just pick one. Just one.
All right. That is
a hard question, Thomas.
That is
we like to
question.
Keep you on your toes.
Yeah. I tell you what. I'm going to go back to Toledo Bend.
That's out of the top 12?
I want Toledo Bend.
No, I got Toledo Bend.
I love Toledo Bend.
I'm Bansky. Now it's Helen's.
Okay. Choice. I've heard really good things about Coeur d'Alene in Idaho.
Oh, God. I'll swap you with my Toledo for your Coeur d'Alene.
That's actually a pretty good decision. That's I'm going to traverse myself home, and I'm going to launch my boat on Mille Lacs in about November, right about 2 weeks before ice. And I'm going to throw out about a 21-inch sucker. I'm going to troll that thing around for a giant 55-inch muskie, because that is what eats bass.
So embarrassing.
Hey, you know what? This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for joining in. This is Inside Bassmaster Podcast. This has been your host, Thomas Allen. For Helen White, for James Hall, make sure you tune in next time. We may be talking about fantasy fishing. We may be talking about the next issue of the Bassmaster magazine. Maybe Bass Times. Get Brian Brasher up in the house. That would be a lot of fun.
That'd be fun.
We'd have a lot of fun with that, too. But thanks for being with us. If you love these podcasts from Bassmaster, make sure you check out Tom Abrams' show, which is also available for download on Bassmaster.com. Thanks for being with us.
Roll Tide.
Where are you going?